everyone. This is Marty Oakley of the PBJ Gazette Online, and this is TS Radio. Tonight's show, Whistleblowers, is brought to you in coordination with Marcel Reed and the Whistleblower Summit, an annual event that occurs every July in Washington, D.C. Before we get started tonight, I want to remind everybody about Operation Stand Together. That'll take place on the Mall in D.C. on May 20th. Vincent Deem is putting this together. It's a veterans rally. You can find out everything you want to know about it by going to www.operationstandtogether, that's all one word, .org. And everything you need to know is there, contact information, directions, the whole nine yards. The second thing is the Vietnam Veterans Festival, which will be taking place in September in Illinois, and they are still looking for vendors and help with funding. The land has been donated for the festival, and they're working hard to put this together. They need money to help pay insurance costs for porta potties and other little things and incidentals. Nobody's looking to make a buck off of this. It's just simply to get the veterans out there and back in their communities. Our guest tonight has been a lifesaver. Today has been one of those days where everything just blew up that I touched. And so our guest is Tim King. And thank you for coming on at the last minute, Tim, because I truly appreciate it. For those of you who aren't familiar with him, and I don't know who that would be, but just in case, he's a former U.S. Marine. He's got 20 years of experience on the West Coast as a television news producer, photojournalist, reporter, and assignment editor. He also covered the war in Afghanistan, 2006-2007, and he was in Iraq over the summer of 2008 and embedded with both the U.S. Army and Marines. He's gotten a ton of awards over the years, but he has several years of experience in network affiliate news TV stations, having worked as a reporter and photographer at NBC, ABC, and Fox stations in Arizona, Nevada, and Oregon. And Tim, welcome to the show, and again, thank you.
Marty, I appreciate it. Thank you.
Yeah. Oh, this has just been such a day. You wanted to talk this evening, and I've been doing some research on the Fast and Furious scandal. And I found out something today, Tim, that I didn't know, and that was that this actually started in 2006 under Bush, and it was called Operation Wide Receiver. And then it ran till 2009. They shut that down, and then the ATF. Have I got that correct?
Yeah. And then this Gunwalker program, known as Fast and Furious. You know, there are just so many things about it. One real interesting mark. In fact, I can give you a year. Eric Holder was asked how long he had known about Fast and Furious during a congressional subcommittee hearing headed by Congressman Daryl Issa of California, and Holder said he had known about it for 3 weeks. Well, we received copies of a press release that was released in Mexico only when he visited Mexico City more than 2 years prior to that, and the operation was revealed in that press release. So Holder lied. That's probably the biggest story I've ever written. That thing went just crazy all over the world that night, was mentioned everywhere from Fox News to Mike Malloy, Air America. So from the far right to the far left. And that's the thing with Fast and Furious, is that this isn't such a politically divided subject. This is something that really, I think, impacts all Americans pretty equally, at least those who know about it. You know, it wasn't Republican or Democrat. It was just corrupt government at work, and there's so much to it. And for those listening that don't know, basically Fast and Furious was providing weapons to Mexican drug cartels so that when they were used in crimes and recovered, they could be traced by their serial numbers to figure out where they went. It's the most absurd thing. And those weapons led to the deaths of two U.S. federal agents and one prominent Mexican attorney and more people beyond that than we can even count. The United States government taking weapons to cartels who are already deadly and murderous, and giving them to them so they could trace them. Biggest source and the best source on all of this, just for what it's worth, is my friend Tosh Plumley. And I think you know Tosh, don't you, Marty?
Yes. Yep.
Well, Tosh was down on the border when all of this stuff was going down. he was telling me about it before it ever came out. And, you know, they talked about 1,800 weapons in the Fast and Furious operation. Tosh has told me that there were times that more than that number of weapons were going across the border every day. So.
Oh, my God. Well, and the thing is, if you or I had done this, they'd have called it gun running, and which is sounds way, but with this weasel word swapping they do all the time, it was changed to gun walking because that sounds far more benign. And like we weren't really doing anything wrong, you know, we were walking the guns down there, as opposed to you who was running them like a thief in the night. Honest to God, when this thing blew up, Tim, it was one of those moments when you sit there and you think, should I just get up and start banging my head in the wall? What should I do here? Who in the world came up with such an idiotic idea to begin with?
Yeah, no, that's a really great question. I don't know the answer to this, but like in a general summary, what I tell people is, you know, the United States has been pretty brutal on the world for a really long time, right?
Yes.
After, you know, the Korean War, certainly during and after the Vietnam War, we moved into Central and South America, and we just started, you know, carving our way through, sponsoring coup d'etats to take out political leaders who didn't agree with us or whose philosophies were a little bit different. Conduct and orchestrate these large-scale murders of people, the CIA, and then we would back, you know, military operations. We would, like in Iran, Iraq, we backed both sides with weapons so they could just go tear each other up. All right. But the difference is, back in those days, those people that were orchestrating these events were doing it for the betterment of the United States, right, wrong, or indifferent. It was all blood money, but it benefited our country. And when you get to the point of Fast and Furious, you realize that it's all the same stuff, but without any intention of doing anything for the United States except causing it harm.
Well, I think what's bothering everybody and people, it has bothered me for a long period of time, we have no business going into the Middle East or anywhere else and uprooting their government, blowing up their country, taking their assets under some guise of humanitarian rights, and then taking these people, as they're asking us to do now, that they have made refugees out of, bringing them here, dumping them out, and saying, you have to take care of them. Well,
yeah.
I'm sorry, and nothing against these people, you know. It's nothing against it. This isn't about racism, right? But why did we go blow them up to begin with? And it's always this phony excuse. I know this sounds like it's maybe way out of left field, and maybe it is. But I remember I think it was 2013, Hillary Clinton was at the Military Contractors Conference. And she was bragging about the 74 or 94 armed conflicts that the U.S. was involved in that the country knew nothing about. They wanted to make money. They needed to get their contracts cemented now. And then in July of that same year, she's at the U.N. talking about how children need to feel safe in their neighborhoods. And the only way they can feel safe is if they sign that small arms treaty, which is kicking the knees out from under the Second Amendment. And the whole time all this is going on, we are blowing people up. We are destroying entire countries. We are doing terrible things to people. And I think people are finally starting to wake up. We don't want any more war. We don't want to do this anymore. And it isn't for our country, Tim. This has nothing to do with protecting our freedom. And I have come to the conclusion, and long ago, that nobody hates us for our freedom more than our own government. And
good statement.
You know, I mean, do you remember when George Doofus Bush stood up and said that, and he looked with them beady eyes side to side in the room, and he said, because they hate us. They hate us for our freedoms.
Oh.
And then he would... You know, and I thought, no, you hate us for our freedoms. You know, those people could give a crap.
I don't want to go too far down this road, but I know you know how I feel about it.
Yeah.
On the very day that George W. Bush was telling Americans that Osama bin Laden was connected with this 9/11 event, Osama bin Laden was all over the world press saying, I had nothing to do with it. But Bush wanted people to believe that he was Anyway, that's the craziest, this whole 9/11 thing. Let's not even, that's the whole ball of that.
But my point in bringing up Clinton was, you know, here they're selling these weapons, and they're selling these weapons. Our government is buying them. And then we've got this debacle going down on the southern border, and we've got Americans being shot and killed along that border, and our agents, you know, under threat there. And we're running guns to them. To the very.
I know. But you know what is even uglier? You know, the one agent, Border Patrol agent, who was killed was Brian Terry. And I've done a lot of work on this story, and Tosh has done a lot more because he's spent a lot of time with the Terry family. And I'll just, you know, long story short, Brian Terry was killed. Obviously he was killed, but Brian Terry was killed by somebody on this side of the border. Brian Terry wasn't killed by random Mexican drug people. Brian Terry was taken out because he knew what was going on with Fast and Furious and was one of the people that the feds were worried about. And what do they do when they worry about somebody? But they terminate their life. And that surely is the simplest way to take care of that. But I'll just tell you that Brian Terry had some notes in a diary that were stashed away and that were not recovered immediately by the feds. And those notes have revealed a lot about what he knew. So, and you know, when we're talking about whistleblowers, isn't that what this thing is about? I mean, the whistleblower protections are gone. And the ATF agents who brought Fast and Furious forward were totally fired and retaliated against. And that's the spirit, of course, of the country in the last few years, all during the Obama time. Whistleblowers were just being, you know, scuttled left and right. And
how do you think it's going to be under Trump? How do you think it's going to be under Trump?
Oh, well, I already know. I'm in Facebook jail right now for an article that I wrote about Trump yesterday. Because of this article, I got blocked from participating in Facebook groups until March 22nd. So now all you have to do is write an article about Trump that is negative, and Facebook will come along and throw you in Facebook jail for it. I'm talking to another news agency right now that I will be writing for in the very near future, and this is American X News. And American X, like the letter. And all I can say is, you know, I'm working on an article about Trump and his, you know, the 13-year-old rape victim. Of course, she's a grown woman today, but and I can just tell you that this news agency brought up the idea of lawsuits. Trump's legal teams are crawling up the rear end of anybody who goes very far with Trump, and they're taking people out. They took out Gawker. So Trump's attorneys are really actually working on physically shutting media down if they report negatively against him. I don't think we've ever had anything as horrific or unimaginable as what we've got now.
Yeah.
And it's been bad for a while, and it's been sliding toward worse. Obama gave us false hope in the beginning, made us think that he was going to be who, you know, said he was going to be. He ends up just being a warmonger. And then Hillary Clinton, I actually see her as the biggest warmonger of all, you know, because she's the wolf in sheep's clothing, you know, the blonde-haired Democrat mother, always talking about family values and then preaching about war. I mean, it's – and bragging about killing Gaddafi in that one clip.
Oh my God.
The barbarity that our country is behind is unprecedented. It's just
– Tim, I have talked to a lot of people about that very thing, about Libya and Gaddafi, and they talked about how bad he was. Actually, he was quite good to his people, and then they found out the CIA – bust in Iraqis, paid them to protest, and I saw something that disgusted me so badly I couldn't stand it. When they drug that man's body, mangled and shot up and tore up in front of the cameras for the world to see, and then went and killed his sons also, because they wouldn't let in central banking and the oil cartels, and he basically was... He had Libya up on its feet economically. They were doing well. Everybody was pretty much taken care of, much better than we take care of our own people. And her bragging about this, about, you know, how she was the one that called the order. We should have been ashamed as a country. We should have hung our head in shame for what we did to that country, to that man and his family. And I want to ask you something.
Agree.
this Mad Dog Mattis that they put in at the head of the Pentagon or Department of Defense or whatever it was, this
Marine
guy
General
scares, right? Yeah, scares me to death. And I tell people, if you think his career bragging about shooting people, how he enjoys shooting people, how he loves it when their heads explode and blah, blah, you're listening to a psychopath talk. And he will kill you just as quickly as he killed them with just as much pleasure. Don't think this man won't turn on you. He has no connection to anyone. And I'm watching all of this come into place. And we see this stuff like Fast and Furious. I think there's a lot more going on. I think you're absolutely correct. Under Obama, whistleblowers took a beating. I know just for doing this show, I've been walking a line, boy, I'll tell you, but I'm not going to quit. I'm not going to quit.
Right.
That's, you know, they shoot us with jamming signals. They do all kinds of things. I get threats and everything. I'm not going to stop. They will have to.
Never stop.
I won't. And so the only way is if they take me off the air and then I'll just come up somewhere else. But this is what I'm saying. We as a country, this Fast and Furious thing should have made us all, regardless of what history was at that time, should have made us aware that the corruption and in our government is so ingrained, it is so much a part of everything they do, that they could actually do something like this and arm people intentionally against us on our border. And that's what they did. That's what they did. And I saw, too, with that Brian Terry, they claimed that the bullet was mangled so bad they couldn't tell which gun it came from.
Oh,
I ain't buying that for
cool.
a minute. Yep. Exactly.
No.
And there was.
And Brian Terry was a Marine before Border Patrol. So for me, it's particularly haunting on that level, too. You know what I mean? It's just like, oh, man. Very
but
hard to take.
Yeah. Well, and then I had read some, I remember I was doing a show here, producing a show here in Minnesota for about 4 years called The Ruthie Report for a lady here in Minnesota. She's quite well known, Ruthie Hendricks. And she's severely anti-immigration, illegal immigration, but never from a racist standpoint. It was what it was doing to us. It was how it was wrecking our economy up here, our communities. It just was devastating. And this is where she operated from. What was it? What effect was it having on us to let this go on? And I remember they put Ramos and Compeon in prison. And I never understood why. But then in reading this afternoon, I see Compeon was part of some ATF deal they had going on. And he served, I think, what, 2 or 4 years? He got prosecuted for that. And you had that prosecutor there in Texas, that Johnny Sutton, that was key in that. And then he went after other Border Patrol agents, too, while providing protection for people for south of the border. So something else was – Tim, I might be wrong, but I think this was supposed to have gotten way worse than what it did. Because I think there was Plan B. What do you think?
Oh, I think that's very possible. You know, we can – there's the part that we can see, and then there's everything underneath. It's like an iceberg, you know, a little bit of it sticks out there for you to see, but the overwhelming, majority of it is out of sight and it's, you know, doing its thing and we don't even know. And now this new WikiLeaks thing that came out about the CIA and their techniques at wiretapping and all this. I mean, it just, and, you know, these forces are all gaining power. Everything, you know, the hackers are gaining power, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, everybody. And this thing the other day in Berkeley, you know, there was a pro-Trump protest. And then, you know, I mean, that's kind of like, I mean, Berkeley, you know, I mean, it's the most left-wing place you could find. But in the midst of all of that, with the two sides going at it, here come the anarchists, right? And the anarchists with their masks, and they just start beating on people and provoking. And this is what we're headed toward. It's total disarray. There won't be, when it all goes to hell in a handbasket in America, it won't just be two distinct sides of people like in the Civil War. It'll be, you know, more like the Middle East with little tribes of people. And,
yes.
And so we're losing our way. I don't know what comes next, you know. I just don't know. But I know that the cleanup of all these devastating matters that we're talking about is not happening. And I don't think anyone has any intent. Of course, you know, they opened DAPL back up. They opened Keystone XL. It took everything that we've worked so hard all these years to have a level of control over. And it's over. So, you know, I mean, good Lord. We're not the longest running democracy in history. I mean, but we're really close, you know.
And yes.
As much as I love democracy, I think we're seeing the real results of it, you know, and that's that people are going to put in who they want. And I don't know. I'm thinking as I speak out loud, but
I
it's
know, that's
just
all
so
right.
devastating.
Well, and it is. Yeah. And the thing is, too, I have a good friend who works with somebody notable, and she, in a conversation with me, started talking about the leftists and the socialists and all of this. And she says, and we've got to avoid that. And I said, stop. I said, she says, well, do you want to live in a communist country? And I said, explain to me the difference between communism and fascism. And she says, well, communism is collectivism. I said, so is fascism. I said, all the rich people collect at the top and the rest of us collect at the bottom and we do whatever they tell us. We have nothing. They've got everything. What do you get with socialism? Same system. You just call it a different name. Same system. And I said, it's just which sales pitch did you buy? And I said, we talked about the election. I said, it didn't make any difference about who won the election. It really didn't. We're going the same place. It's just which route are we taking?
If we had gotten Sanders in, it might be different. But certainly once it came down to Clinton and Trump, then that was the only, you know, the inevitable outcome of it.
I agree.
We lost our opportunity with that guy. We really did.
Yeah. Well, and you look at the election before that, Tim. Ron Paul, the public loved him. And he could have easily had a landslide election. He'd have taken Democrats, Libertarians. He raised more money in 3 days over the net from grassroots than anybody has ever raised for an election. The Republican Party had a surefire winner. They could have swept everything, and they would not support that man. They would
he's
not.
Too moderate. Yeah, he's too logical.
Yeah, there you
I
go.
I know.
Yeah. Yep. And you
no,
saw
I like
them
Ron
line
Paul.
Up. Yeah, I did too. And you saw, but you saw the Republican Party, even this last election, the biggest lineup of buffoons and clowns. And you got to be kidding me.
I know.
I thought, this is the best you people got. This is all you got. And then on the other side, you got Clinton. Probably one of the most murderous, treacherous, duplicitous, lionist, deceivinist, connivinist women that's ever walked the planet. And I mean, and
really
this is our choice.
Me, you know, I used to believe that women politicians were the answer. And then you get Hillary Clinton and Aung San Suu Kyi and these idiots around the world that they mystify us and they mislead us into believing that there's this, you know, other thing going on.
Yeah.
And it just is going on. No.
Yeah. It just, I don't know. Do you think, let me ask you this. Do you think they're actually going to build that wall on the border?
You know, there are already walls all over the place. Let me give you a snapshot of reality on that. My son used to be a Cochise County, Arizona deputy. And he was being hired to moonlight at night to take his police car. What he would do is bring his laptop and some movies, right? And he'd go park his police car at the border. Why was he parking his police car at the border? Because they're building a fence already. They're always building fences and walls. Well, the meth users were coming in and stealing the metal at night that they were using to build the fence. And they were reselling it to the – I know, you almost have to laugh. It's like, so there's my son making this huge hourly wage to sit there and try to catch the meth freaks from stealing the metal that they are building the border walls with. A lot of the border along between U.S. and Mexico – is very, very small. You know, it's a wall that you could easily go over. Anyone who's been, however, to Tijuana or anywhere like that knows that the wall in California in many places is very substantial already. Do I think they'll build it? No. And I think that it has as much integrity as the Great China Wall or something like that. I just think that walling people in and pulling them out is not the answer. But then I'm also a real soft heart on all this. I'm a one world citizen. I don't believe in all the borders. I don't believe in all of this stuff. I believe people should all be able to live and prosper and do well. And, you know, the border thing just turns into nationalism, and then nationalism is a killer, you know.
It is.
So,
but it's like religion. I consider religion in any form a blight on humanity. That doesn't have anything to do with faith in God. But I see it the same way.
Right.
I, on the other hand, I like borders because it gives us an identity and a place where we come from. And, you know, other cultures, the interest in other cultures is lost when you start blurring these lines and you see this movement of people, forced or otherwise. This started on the border in earnest in 2003 when Bush in Waco signed that Security and Prosperity Partnership calling for open borders and free movement of people and good to benefit business, meaning corporations. And we saw this wholesale mass exodus out of Mexico into the United States. We have absorbed now somewhere between 20 and 30 million. We don't even know who's there. So, and plus all the people that have overstayed their visas and got in here that we don't know about. So to me, logically, this war on terror is BS. And it's basically the war on terror is a war against American nationals. I consider myself an American national, not a U.S. citizen. I don't live in D.C. And but I consider it a war against us, those of us who were here. And like I say, when I see what this unfettered mass exodus out of Mexico has done to us, even as far north here as Minnesota, what it's done to our communities, to our economy, I mean, it's just sapped us. And now we have roving gangs of people everywhere that scare you to death. And the crime rate is through the roof. And I guess when you're hungry and you got no place to stay, you do what you have to do. But I don't understand it. You couldn't. The thing is with me, Tim, you couldn't blast me out of here. This is my home. This is my country. This is who I am. And I'm not leaving. I'll fight you to death. I'll go out on my feet, but I ain't leaving on my knees. And that's a fact.
Right.
And I don't understand people supposedly fleeing. Why didn't you stay and fight for your country? See, I don't understand this.
I think I know the answer to this. And it's because the United States of America has been a terrible, terrible, rotten neighbor to Mexico. Starting with the Gadsden Purchase in 1856, where we stole all of that land. And you know, like, not where I am in Oregon, but where I grew up in California, that was all Mexico at one point. So, you know, that's the Aztlan movement of the Hispanic culture, is they don't accept that was a good deal. And that's why, you know, where I grew up in Los Angeles, I mean, the strength of that culture, you can't touch it. It's very, very, very powerful. Well, I go back again to the fact that the United States has had the opportunity always to help bolster Mexico. There have always been many ways to stimulate economies, but instead we haven't done that. And we've made them become so poor. And then we Americans became huge buyers of the drugs. And that's what led. There would be no drug war in Mexico if the Americans didn't all buy the drugs. So
exactly.
I just see us in all of it. I do. You know, I personally, I'd live in Mexico tomorrow. My friend Vic Pittman sent me an article. He's on his way back up from Mexico right now yesterday. Do you know that there are up to 1 million undocumented Americans living in Mexico, illegal immigrants? Isn't that wild?
It is.
Up to 1 million. And
it may be the reason why the largest Social Security office in existence is sitting in Mexico City. So that might explain a lot.
Parts of Mexico do really well. Parts of it don't. The border's tough. The police are corrupt. The army's corrupt. The Mexican Marines are not corrupt. Tasha's worked with them quite a bit. They're very, very, very dependable people. But it's, and you know, bribery has been a part of the landscape forever, just like it is all throughout Asia. And, you know, you got to pad some palms to get by, but you can. At least you know you'll get where you're going as long as you got money in your pocket to slide out to the Federale or whoever. I don't know what the answers are, but I just – I think that if it had grown and developed differently over the years until now, everything would be very different. And it's taxation. It's tax breaks for the rich. You know, it's always – you know, removing the middle class from existence, you know, driving the bases of our poor. And it's just, and now we've gotten to this new guy and it's like, and suddenly, I know, you know, where I'm going to say all these people that he's putting in charge of these agencies are the people that screwed us all the years.
And should have gone to prison,
Every one of them. I'm writing an article right now about the 13-year-old girl and Trump, and I'm pulling up some very, very, very interesting stuff. So I don't mean to switch the subject.
No, that's all right.
We are in a pit of corruption, a pool of corruption from top to bottom. And did you happen to hear Congressman Joe Kennedy's words today about Paul Ryan? Ryan called the new Trump health care package – mercy. He used the word mercy for it. And man, that Joe Kennedy, I think he's an up and comer. And I'm quite affectionate, I have to admit. You know what I mean? I like the era. And I think Bobby Kennedy was absolutely on point. And I think JFK was pretty damn good too.
Yep. I do too. You know, the thing is, just like with that healthcare thing, they talk about 20 to 30 million people now have health insurance that couldn't get it, which quite honestly, they could. You just couldn't afford it. And now they said, even though you can't afford it, now you're going to buy it anyway. But so many people didn't buy it that last year alone, they took in somewhere between $5 and $7 billion in fines. So apparently 20 to 30 million Americans said, screw you. And paid the fine instead. This whole thing, they keep talking about the free markets. We've never had free markets. This is privileged pay to play. That's exactly what it is. And if you ain't got the money, go ahead.
Yep. And the Republicans keep using the term access to health care. And I was reading this article today. It's hilarious. They're like, well, access to health care and having health care. It's like we have access to Lamborghinis and Ferraris, right? We have access to million-dollar houses, but that doesn't mean we're going to be driving one or living in one because it's impossible. And that's
right.
It's just this foolhardy approach of Republicans who are so disconnected from the ranks of the real people. They're so above everybody that they can't even begin. You know, W. Bush was the epitome, right, of a rich man who couldn't begin. Trump is so low that he's, I think, had a lot of more common man experiences than W. Bush did. And, you know, I look at Trump, like, in his previous periods, and he's been a very cool guy at different times. I just can't convince myself on anything now. But I still remain hopeful, you know, that something good could come out of it. I don't know what it might be.
Well, you know, I thought, you know, even with this guy not being a Washington insider, so to speak, I thought if he got in there, I tell you, he took the election in that third debate when I can't remember the moderator's name now, and he's a well-known man, but I can't remember it. But anyway, when he pinned Clinton down on that speech she gave in front of Brazil, talking about she looked forward to the day when there were no borders, and Trump responded, you've got no borders, you've got no country. And that resonated. That resonated with the public. If we have no borders, we have no country. And somebody said, well, if we have no country, then we don't have to pay any taxes, right? Wrong. Don't ever get that in your head. But, you know, that clinched it right there. I don't know. Did you? And then, of course, the talk about building the wall was the other thing, building the wall and stopping this flood of people. And people say, you know, well, we're a country of immigrants. We may be. But, you know, even we can only absorb so much. And they're telling us already that we are at capacity, you know, we're, you know, we can't take much more. And so you're going to bring in another 1 million or 2 million every year, plus whoever floods over that border. It's not. And then tell me we've got a war on terror because there's a boogeyman out there that wants to get me. And I remember, yeah, was it that guy who's that Republican, that femme fatale, God, Lindsey Graham.
Oh, yeah.
And he said, made that remark here a few years back about, you know, the terrorists are right outside your bedroom window. And he was telling the absolute truth. And they all got on U.S. uniforms. It's NSA. It's the CIA. It's the FBI. It's people you never knew were your neighbors who are spying on you. Yes, the terrorists are outside your bedroom window. And now they're in your house and they're on your phone and getting in your computer and everywhere else. These aren't people, these aren't foreign agents that want to kill us. This is our own government. This is our own government.
Yeah.
You know?
Good point, once again.
Yep.
Ben,
and
Tosh,
I don't. Go ahead.
Tosh used to talk about how even in the years after he was no longer a federal employee, he could always contact the State Department and there were always people that he could fall back on. He could always get done what he needed, and he's talked about in recent years, and now we'll be talking about, like, it just happened again. But everyone from the old school days who really had heart for America, they're all retired. They're gone,
yes.
And the ranks have turned over. And now under Trump, everything's turning over again. Not necessarily all of those tired positions, but, you know, it's just change,
yeah,
and more change and more change.
Well,
we had to really hear it.
Yeah, we hear again about how we have the highest corporate tax rate in the world. Yeah. Well, see, here's the deal. You might be taxed at 38%. That might be the rate. But then by the time you get to use the step up, step back basis, the step down, step forward basis, this hedge, that hedge, another hedge, and you only have to, you get to defer 78% of your actual net income for perpetuity and only claim 22% of your real income and pay taxes on that. By the time you get to dodge and do all these loopholes, you pay a marginal rate of 5.3 or 4% on only 22% of your admitted income. And 73% of corporations now pay no taxes whatsoever. But did you know that they have a refund, a tax rebate program for them? And even though
no,
they don't pay any taxes, they, like AT&T here a few years back, got something like $12 million in tax refund for taxes they never paid. Yeah. And they, see, they don't tell you that side of it. They don't tell you that side of it. And when you get 5.3 or 4% marginal rate on only 22% of your admitted income, what that means is where you're paying somewhere between 17 and 28% minimally on your taxes, and you have to claim everything with no deductions, your
right,
tax rate actually is accelerated when you pay sales tax and property tax and excise tax and this tax and that tax to about 80% of every dollar you make is going for taxes. And these people are paying no taxes. And these are the people, you, like you say, that, you know, live in the palatial estates and drive the big expensive cars and, you know, should have been in prison, but they're not, you know, it just makes you want to scream. I just don't know where we're going to go with all this. And just like, okay, now I want to ask you this, and I mean this earnestly. We've got all of these illegal immigrants up here. Let's say, take Minnesota, for example. Then in St. Cloud, Minnesota, we have the largest Somali population in the country, and they keep bringing them there by the thousands and literally just dumping them out. And now they're talking about the state of Minnesota has to take somewhere between 19 and 25,000 Syrian refugees, meaning people that we blew up their homes and their country, and we got to put them somewhere. And I don't see how all of this is going to work. And the reason I don't see it working is my experience with it has been you have this clashing of cultures, of religion, of values, of tradition. And we'll take the Somalis as an example. You've thrown them into a heavily German, Finlander, Swede state that is based in Catholicism and Lutheranism for the most part. I mean, there's a few Baptists and Methodists here and there, but they run them off as quick as they find them. And here you've brought these I told you I just can't stand this religious thing. But anyway, and you bring these people in, and they're trying to bring their culture with them. And they are diametrically opposed on so many things to the standing community. Plus, you have this influx of people who came here just because, hey, that looks like a fun place to go. And they haven't been here for winter yet. And, you know, the thing is, see, I don't see how this is going to work. And I don't think it is intended to work. Do you remember, Tim, do you remember back 60s, 70s? I don't know how old you are.
I'm 53.
Oh, God, I got you beat by years. Anyway, they did what they used to call blockbusting down in the South. And they'd go into a high-dollar neighborhood of homes. And they would move a black family in there. It was all a white neighborhood. And, of course, the minute they did that, you know, the whites would take flight.
This is what happened in Los Angeles, and they call it the Great White Flight. And they all moved down to Orange County because they were scared of the black people. And that was – so, I mean, if people are that willing to let their fears drive them, then I don't know what the answers are. I mean, you get to me.
I don't either.
I'm very open on immigration. If I believe that if it was done right, that it could work.
Yes.
And if people are being dropped off, and you know, the interpreters that I worked with in Iraq and Afghanistan, all the ones that I worked with ended up over here. But you know what? They couldn't bring their families, and you know what? They couldn't really find work. And, you know, the U.S. federal government has a bunch of restrictions on who can work for the federal government in these capacities. And because they're born in Afghanistan or Iraq, they don't qualify. So
now, does that make sense to you? Does that make sense to you? To me, that is so stinking stupid. I can't stand it. We're training people supposedly to speak these languages so they can interpret. But we've got people that came out of that who are willing to do that for us, that know the language. And we're not putting them to work?
Right.
What is
and
wrong
you know
with
these
this?
Folks do? Yeah. These folks are considered to be the biggest sellouts in the world to their own people because we're just a vicious occupying army that comes in and kills people. You know, they're already poor, so they decide to take a job with the U.S. Army. And all of the interpreters made several hundred dollars a month. So for them, you know, I work with interpreters who are physicians. But they stopped being doctors so that they could be interpreters with the U.S. military because they made so much more. But then the second that the war ends, then the U.S. leaves everyone holding the bag and they all, you know, the Americans leave and suddenly they're surrounded by all the people that the Americans protected them from. So that's a subject in itself. It's so disturbing to me. I don't know if you remember during the middle of the Iraq war that somebody in the United States, was it Rumsfeld or somebody like that, wanted to put down a rule saying that interpreters could not cover their faces. The only reason that they ever lived a single day doing that job is because they could cover themselves up and not be identified.
Mm-hmm.
But that's that American mentality being mixed in with it again, and it's like, what are you people thinking? You know? Anyway, war is such a terrible deal.
It is, and I'm so sick. You know, I keep watching them trying to crank this thing up against Russia. And there again, and I was doing an interview on another station out in New York here a couple weeks ago. And it was brought up, some woman called in whining about Putin. And I said, you know, I don't know why you're worried. I said, he's just like Assad. He's just sitting there watching, waiting. And I said, we have antagonized Iran, done everything we could to try to get them to fire a shot. And I said, they sitting there. And I said, Israel has flown training missions over there in their airspace and actually dropped a couple bombs. It was just an accident. And they still sit there. And then she says, well, what about Putin? She said, you know, he wants to destroy America. I said, apparently a lot of people do. And I said, he has no interest. I said, that man is so busy building his country up. Yeah. And I said, she says, well, they're arming themselves. And I said, what did you think they were going to do? Sit there like ducks? I said, NATO has his perimeter surrounded, and they're bringing in more military every day. What did you think that man was going to do?
In Syria this week, in fact.
Oh, God.
You know, they're not giving us Trump is doing this thing under Trump. They're holding back information that they've never held back before. And this whole thing about going after the media, you know what? There are no words for that stuff. There are no words for that. That is just the most I'm trying to control my tongue. I don't want to say anything.
That's
I'm not supposed to say on the radio, but the most fascist policies that we've ever heard of. And it's just insane. And the whole attack on the press. I mean, anyway, you know who does that. That's what, you know, what they did. That's what all these terrible world leaders have done over the years. And now we've got
that,
one. So,
and disarming the people is the first thing they did was silence your ability to speak on any level unless you agreed with them. And the second thing was to disarm every, so you were safe, except you weren't safe from them. And that's who you needed to be afraid of. I get so angry at these people, and they're usually right wingers. You know, I have to tell you, Tim, I was down at the Minnesota legislature. It's been here some years ago, and they were trying to pass one of these big gun control bills. And I'm walking down the hallway, and here comes these loony women down the hallway, and they got T-shirts on that says "No guns," and it had a big red circle strike through it that said "I don't want to be shot." This was, I tell you when this was. It was 2005, and I know that is because of Vioxx. And the reason I was down there was because of Vioxx. And
oh, I see.
Yeah. So I'm looking at this woman, and she's standing there like she just came down off the cross. And I said, "Excuse me, what's that shirt supposed to be?" She says, "I don't want to be shot." I said, "Do you know anybody who does?" And she said, "Well, no." I said, "Exactly, you idiot." And I said, "But we've got almost 500,000 people dead from Vioxx." I said, "Why don't you have a shirt on that says, I don't want to be Vioxxed?" And she goes, "What are you talking about?" I said, "We've got a drug that has killed 500,000 people."
And she probably didn't even know what you were talking about.
No, not a clue. Not a clue. "I don't want to be shot." Well, yeah, like I'm going to run around with one that shoot me, you know. These people, and especially if they get into this mindset, like they're going to save the world if they take away your guns. We've got, 358 million legal guns in this country? I don't think guns are the issue.
No, I don't either. I'm certainly for the Second Amendment, you know. You know what I find interesting is how when Obama went into office, gun sales went right through the roof. I mean, remember the shot out of bullets? And as soon as Republicans get into office, gun sales drop. Boof. So
and I don't know why.
Because the Republicans, no threat, and Obama was considered a threat because the NRA kept saying so, even though he didn't take any concrete, measurable steps to outlaw guns. But because they're told he will. So anyway, it ends up being that it's better for the gun lobbies to have a Democrat in office than a Republican. Kind of funny, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Who saw that one?
Well, you know, there you go, Tim. This is another one of those weasel word swaps, like the difference between gun running and gun walking. Treaties versus agreements. A treaty has to be ratified by 38 of the states, signed by the president. It becomes the supreme law of the land. When they are talking about a trade agreement, they are talking about an agreement between corporations, government corporations, and we are not compelled to comply with that. That is not the law of the land. It can apply in the District of Columbia, but that's the only place. But they buy the way into the state and implement their business plan, and they openly call it that. But people, they beat people to death with language, and people don't understand that the semantics actually mean something.
Absolutely.
You need to understand what – I always bring up George Dufus. Whenever he was speaking from a constitutional point, he referred to himself as the president. But when he was speaking as CEO of the corporation that poses as our government, he referred to himself as the chief executive. He was telling you point blank in what capacity he was acting. And the president of the United States has no authority to issue an executive order. But the CEO of a corporation does it as a matter of daily business. And it, you know, listen, pay attention here. You know, they're doing it right in front of you. You know, vaccines, which I don't even want to get off on, but efficacy and efficiency. People think they mean the same thing. No, they do not. Efficacy is when you take a control group that is medically most likely to respond favorably, meaning they didn't drop over dead from the vaccine. You have an efficacy of maybe 80 to 90%. Efficiency is when you apply it broadly across the population without any filters. Then it drops down to 5 or 4% because you killed a whole bunch of people and made a lot of others really, really sick. But people think it's the same word. It isn't. It means two different things. I always get caught up in what I call weasel word swaps. You know, they're doing it again. It sounds like it should be right, but it isn't. I don't know.
No, I relate to what you're saying. And, you know, I've written many articles about Israel and the Palestinians. And if you ever write about how, you know, Israel's murdering of Palestinians is wrong, you get called anti-Semitic. And I used to tell people, it's a matter of semantics. Therefore, I am not anti-Semitic. I am anti-Semantic. Anyway. To be labeled something terrible like that, because you don't like the actions of a government. I mean, that's got to be the longest running bust right there. Israel's so good at that.
Oh, God, please. I'm so sick of hearing about that. I'm so sick of Israel.
Oh, they're losing
so sick of it.
Israel's losing it. Yeah, that's coming out in front of people now. I mean, they're starting to put two and two together and realize that there's no equity here, you know, and all people deserve the same and all this. Anyway, yeah. Good to not even go down that road because it's so frustrating.
Yeah, I know.
It has everything to do with everything. You know, Israel has at least 150 undeclared nuclear weapons, but 99% of Americans don't know that. And the media will never say it once, except when President Carter came out, whatever it was, 8 or 9 years ago, and announced it to the world. He is a figure of 150, but other sources place it probably above 300. And You know, if people ever want to know about Israel's nuclear program, they should look up Mordecai Vanunu, Mordechai Vanunu, and he's the nuclear tech guy, whatever, who came out of Israel and exposed the bomb factory at the Dimona nuclear plant in Israel's desert. So it's hardcore. And Israel
Go ahead.
The single biggest reason that we have done everything we do in the Middle East, it all relates back to that.
I agree with that totally. I agree with that totally. And under Bush Cheney, we sent Israel 200 bunker busters, those mini nukes. And then under Obama, they sent at least another 100. And they signed the Non-Proliferation Treaty. And nobody ever goes into Israel to examine anything. Nobody ever looks at anything, and we're after Iran because they've got a nuclear power plant, which, by the way, that one at Tehran, Bush Sr., financed. And so we can't blow up his investment, but all of this just makes me crazy. It does. And
I know it.
I'm going to tell you, Tim, after tonight's show, I'll probably get put in Blog Talk jail.
Yeah, you know, the gentleman with that American News X website that I will start writing for, he is in Facebook jail right now, too. It's pretty funny, isn't it? I mean, so, you know, and for people listening, obviously one of the answers on that is to have more than one page. But just be aware that if you're going to throw stones at Trump, that you are probably going to get something coming back to you about it that in past years wouldn't have happened. So,
yeah.
And that's,
well, I know a lot of people are getting censored on Facebook, getting put in what we call Facebook jail. And you can't say anything about anything. And I know a lot of people are jumping off of it, too, and setting up their own web pages and taking their followers with them. And and that's an option we'll probably be looking at, too, because I don't like that kind of – I put things up on my website, Jim, that from – I have people who write for me, you know, make submissions. And a lot of times I don't necessarily agree with what they say, but it's well-researched, well-done, and I know it's what they think, and I'll post it. I don't have any trouble – just don't have any problem with that.
That's what I did at Salem News for all those years, too.
Yep. As long as it's well written. Well documented. I got no problem with it. You don't have to agree with me. In fact, if you did, I'd find you pretty boring. You know, I would find you boring because I'd already know what you thought. So, but listen, we're down to the end here. Again, I want to thank you for jumping in here for me tonight. I truly appreciate it. And because otherwise I just don't know what I would have done. And
it's a pleasure to come on to your show. I it feels good every time. I know we're reaching people and sharing information. And so you can count on me. If I'm available, I'll always be here for you if you need me.
Well, thank you so much, Tim. Everybody that tuned in tonight, I hope you enjoyed the conversation as much as I did. I love getting people on that know their stuff. And, Tim, I've had you on before. I want to have you back on again. I'd have you on all the time if I could. And we might talk about that one of these days, too, doing a regular show maybe at some point. But anyway, everybody, thank you for tuning in. I can tell we had another big crowd again tonight, and I know this one's going to fly all over the net. Keep us on your radar. Watch what we're doing. We're one of the few stations out there that actually talks about anything. And we don't care what movie stars are doing. And so keep tuning in. If you got any questions, send them to tsrad1@outlook.com. If you want to be a guest, same thing, tsrad1@outlook.com. And with that, I need a few minutes here for some sponsors that need to come in. Tim, thank you so much. And
thank
we'll
you,
see
Marty.
Y'all next week. Good night, everyone. Good.